Hello, my name's Gert Attard. I'm a medical oncologist in London, UK. Welcome to this additional series of the Prostate Cancer Masterclass, where I'll debate three of the hot topics from the ASCO Symposium on Genitourinary Cancers 2023, held last week in San Francisco. I'm just back in London over the jet lag, and now's an excellent time to have a discussion on these.
Should all line 1 metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer patients receive olaparib and abiraterone, or talazoparib and enzalutamide, or should we treat solely BRCA-positive with niraparib and abiraterone, or another PARP-I-ARSI combination?
If you measure time in terms of cancer meetings, we're about 6 or 7 cancer meetings since the PROPEL trial first presented their significant improvement in RPFS in meeting the primary endpoint. So PROPEL, and there are two other trials, MAGNITUDE and TALAPRO-2, that have all asked the question about concurrent inhibition of AR and PARP in line 1 mCRPC patients who primarily had not received novel hormonal agents at start of HSPC. So although some of these trials allowed that, really the proportion who had received NHAs previously is less than 10%. That was a tiny subgroup. And of course, the hypothesis is that blocking AR and PARP concurrently will be effective. That cannot be achieved using abiraterone or enzalutamide in someone who has received enzalutamide, apalutamide, darolutamide, abiraterone. So really we're talking about line 1 mCRPC patients who are progressing on ADT, and some may have received docetaxel upfront at start of androgen deprivation therapy. So these this space was defined, I guess, by the ABI-302 and PREVAIL trials more than a decade ago now, that showed improvements in survival when we used abiraterone or enzalutamide for metastatic patients with a rising PSA. So PROPEL took all patients unselected and randomized to abiraterone placebo versus abiraterone olaparib. Primary endpoint was radiographic progression-free survival, and that endpoint was met. And in fact, last year, we're in 2023 now, so last year in 2022, the European regulatory agencies approved olaparib in combination with abiraterone for this indication. A second trial, MAGNITUDE, tested niraparib abiraterone versus abiraterone, but used a different design. Upfront, selected patients and split them into two cohorts, effectively two trials. Those who were positive for genomic testing of tissue or plasma, I think it was germline as well, were called the DRD positive group. And then those who were not positive or were unknown were included in a second cohort, which was the DRD negative. Now, the DRD negative group had a futility analysis after about 200 patients, which used a composite endpoint, including PSA. And the statistical plan was that if futility is met, defined as a hazard ratio greater than 1, then that cohort would close and not accrue to its target of about 600. And futility was met, so no further randomization of patients continued. And really, we don't understand in any detail the RPFS benefit or OS benefit for abiraterone on those patients. But in the BRCA-positive, MAGNITUDE reported a significant improvement in RPFS. It met its primary endpoint for that subgroup. a lot of debate over the past, as I said, five or six meetings, whether the benefit seen in PROPEL was driven by the BRCA positive patients. So although not shown in the initial analysis, subsequent reports of RPFS split patients randomized in PROPEL by whether they had detection of a BRCA alteration done post-randomization using tissue or plasma. Really excitingly, promisingly, very significant benefit for the BRCA mutant patients who got Abi versus Abi or Laprip. And that's in keeping with the magnitude results. In fact, the hazard ratio was around 0.3. However, there's still an indication of benefit in the patients where either no alteration was detected or alteration was unknown. And there's some ambiguity here. I don't think it's entirely clear how many were unknown, how many may have been missed. So that's led to discussion as to whether the benefit in that unselected group could be explained by undetected BRCA positive patients. But I think it's fair to say it's unlikely that the few patients with a BRCA alteration would have pulled the hazard ratio for RPFS to that level of significance. So two big things happened in this field, and one small one. The one small one was that magnitude presented updated results. Their second interim analysis, the benefit for RPFS remains in the BRCA positive group, less so in the scattering of other genes included in the non-BRCA group. For PROPEL, we have now seen the final report for overall survival, where the predefined threshold for statistical significance was not met. OS was a secondary endpoint. Everyone was looking out for this. So we do not see a benefit in terms of overall survival for the overall population, but clearly a benefit seen for the BRCA positive subgroup. The second big thing that happened was TALAPRO2. So similar design, line one MCRPC, but using a different drug combination, in this case, enzalutamide, talazoparib versus enzalutamide. In this case, in TALAPRO2, patients were prospectively defined for their DRD genomic status. And the data that was presented was for the overall population, so we're not the DRD positive population constitute a subgroup within that overall population that hasn't hit maturity. But notably, the RPFS or improvement in RPFS, the primary endpoint for TALAPRO2, is very similar. In fact, just possibly numerically a bit smaller than was reported in PROPEL. So we now have two trials reporting improvements in RPFS for unselected patients. The suggestion in both trials is that the benefit is greater for the BRCA mutants. We have magnitude, which shows that significant benefit in the BRCA mutants, but doesn't address the question in the unselected patients. In PROPEL, we do not see a significant improvement in survival in the unselected group, but probably in the BRCA mutants. Does this become a new standard of care? AR targeting plus PARP inhibition, and does it become a standard of care only in the BRCA mutants versus in all unselected patients? And clearly, this is going to continue to be debated at length. In my mind, there's a growing body of evidence that this is effective in BRCA mutants. We may improve survival. There's going to be a lot of crossover in these trials, but the biology would support the use of a PARP inhibitor first line with an AR targeting drug, especially given as BRCA mutant patients, as was again shown very convincingly across at least two of these trials, have worse outcomes. So the risk benefit ratio is clearly tilting in favor of treatment. I think with the unselected patients, it remains a bit less clear. Clearly, we want to give maximum benefit to our patients. We have a clear signal of improvements in outcome, but there's also toxicity. So there's a toxicity cost in terms of anemia, other indices of myelosuppression that I don't think we can write off. We want to be pretty certain that we're helping a patient across the board. I think having spoken to several colleagues, for a younger, fit patient, there's going to be increasing enthusiasm to offer them a PARP inhibitor with AR targeting in line one MCRPC, even in the absence of a BRCA mutation. But clearly, we need to keep a real eye on caution and what I'd hope to better understand over the next few meetings is where can we possibly define that subgroup of patients in the unselected group that's driving that benefit? Can we better tailor our treatment towards that group who are giving an indication of benefit?
Is rucaparib monotherapy standard of care for post-NHA BRCA-positive metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer?
So second question is PARP inhibitors post-NHA. And really, we already have a license here for olaparib based on the PROfound trial. So in BRCA mutants, so patients who are progressing after ABI or ENZA, plus or minus docetaxel, who are found to be BRCA mutants, are licensed to receive olaparib monotherapy. And that's in Europe. Outside Europe, the license includes a number of other genes in that biomarker definition, including ATM. I won't cover all of them, but the most common are BRCA1, BRCA2, or BRCA2, BRCA1, and ATM. So there were a few gaps that PROfound did not cover. And the first was the control. So in PROfound, the control was repeated use of NHA, which we know to be relatively ineffective. So the question arose, given a proportion of these patients were chemo naive and the proportion would not have received carbazitaxel, is there really a benefit in using a PARP inhibitor first, or should we use a taxane? Second question was, given in PROfound, the primary cohort was included both BRCA and ATM, was there merit in treating ATM mutant patients? So is the efficacy solely in the BRCA mutants? These questions were, I think, very elegantly answered by the Triton 3 trial, which tested rucaparib versus physician choice standard of care. And about half of patients in the standard of care arm received docetaxel. There's a crossover similar to PROfound. So at progression on that standard of care, patients were then offered rucaparib, and of course was not blinded. So about half, just under half, I think, received second line NHA. The rest received docetaxel. All patients were selected to have either an alteration BRCA2 or BRCA1 or ATM. And the results were reported separately. First important conclusion, the significant benefit for using rucaparib in preference to docetaxel for a BRCA mutant. I think this is the first trial we've had in 20 years that shows superiority over docetaxel, and really confirms the place for PARP inhibitors as monotherapy if someone hasn't received a PARP inhibitor previously in a BRCA mutant patient progressing after an HA. The second key result is the hazard ratios in the ATM mutant patients were very close to one, suggesting really limited benefit for use of a PARP inhibitor in this group. Again, consistent with what we've seen in multiple other trials, both in more advanced disease and also in the line one MCRPC setting. So greater clarity for when and for whom to use PARP inhibitors, which hopefully we'll be implementing into our clinical practice soon. The PARP inhibitor uses rucaparib in Triton 3.
For patients receiving radiation therapy post-prostatectomy, should we administer 18 months luteinizing hormone-releasing hormone agonists or 6 months of intensified hormone treatment?
Third discussion point generated around the Formula 509 trial, which is hormone therapy in combination, or which studied hormone therapy in combination with radiotherapy post prostatectomy. The study is relatively small and not going to change practice in itself, but did introduce an interesting hypothesis about shorter duration intensified hormone therapy, which may be equivalent to longer term ADT, 18 months plus. In Formula 509, the hormone combination was LHRHA plus apalutamide plus abiraterone. We now know from multiple trials that that combination AR antagonism plus CYP17 inhibition is not more effective than either alone. I think the hypothesis remains that can we give shorter duration ADT plus abiraterone or an AR antagonist for this population of patients? Challenging because of the long time to events, but certainly commendations to the 509 investigators for taking this on and giving us some data to support a future trial.
Is combination docetaxel with abiraterone or darolutamide the new standard of care for metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer starting long-term ADT?
So the last trial I'll discuss today is the Arisense trial, which was presented a year ago and showed a significant improvement in survival for metastatic HSPC receiving ADT plus docetaxel, who also received darolutamide. The study had not pre-specified splitting patients by disease volume, and this was done post-hoc and presented at this GU/ASCO. There was clear benefit in the high-volume patients, not as obvious in the low-volume patients, which, however, of course, do not have the same event rate. And also, in our sense, constituted a relatively small subgroup of the overall population. I think it's key that in making decisions on who to give triplet therapy to, so ADT, docetaxel, AR therapy, we now have data with for abiraterone in the triplet therapy combination from the PEACE 1 trial, with enzalutamide from the ENZAMET trial, with darolutamide presented here from the Arisense trial. In all these trials, we have no randomization step for docetaxel. So uncertainty will remain as to the benefit, if any, from adding docetaxel to an ADT plus ARSI combination. But in the absence of that, the clear efficacy we're seeing, additional efficacy we're seeing of combining ARSI with docetaxel plus LHRHA is leading to a change in many physicians' practice to offer that triplet therapy to patients with particularly poor prognostic features. And there's data from the docetaxel randomization trials I think we should adopt here. So if we're considering triplet therapy, it should be uniquely for the de novo high volume patients. And the recent individual patient data meta-analysis conducted by the StopCap Consortium suggested a lot of the benefit occurred in patients with bulky primary tumors, so stage T4. So that's possibly useful information to consider when selecting who to offer docetaxel to in combination with ADT plus ARSI. So it's a potential standard of care, but in my mind, certainly not the standard of care for all patients. We don't have level one evidence to support adding docetaxel to ADT ARSI, but certainly something to consider for patients with poor prognostic features. Thank you.